I'm Karen Gibbon, and it's time for three stories you should know.
I think there's just some big change coming, and it's long overdue, and I'm excited.
That's former NHL player Akeem Alou speaking on Tuesday. Alou has accused his former coach, Bill Peters, of making racist comments. Other players have come forward alleging physical abuse by Peters and other NHL coaches. And that's where we'll start this week. I'm joined by Toronto-based sports writer Shireen Ahmed via Skype and by New York Magazine contributing editor Will Leach. Welcome back to both of you.
Hello, Karen. Hi, Will.
An honor, as always. Thank you.
Shireen, fill us in.
Wow, it's been busy in Canada. You know, this all on the tails of Don Cherry, the Hockey Night in Canada host that was fired by Sportsnet for sharing his xenophobic comments and then walking back and not apologizing for them. So Canada and Canadian hockey and hockey culture generally has begun unintentionally and in a very ill-prepared manner, begun a conversation about racism in hockey. And then that has sort of also gone in a way where hockey players have come out to talk about abusive coaches. Alou said what happened was 10 years ago when he played for the Rockport Ice Hogs. And Rob Brind'Amour, who is the now coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, actually corroborated Alou's account. And so that's where we are right now, is me sort of trying to sort of parse out what should be addressed. And honestly, as one of the few people of color who's a sports writer in my country, sort of saying this is who you should be paying attention to and this is who you should be unlearning from.
So, Shireen, coaches got pulled into this conversation when the Maple Leafs fired Mike Babcock. He was let go for not winning games. So how did that turn into this broader conversation?
Well, what happened was Mitch Marner, a Toronto Maple Leaf player, came forward and disclosed that he was punched and kicked. And then people sort of paused and made the usual pronouncements. So he's just very passionate as a coach. I mean, we hear about Bobby Knight being legendary and being aggressive as a coach, but this was a different level. And then different players started coming forward and it became a thing. Social media really, really became a thing in terms of a vehicle for people to disclose this.
Will, what do you make of all this?
You know, I always find it telling how much influence players themselves have in this. And to me, that's encouraging because the thing about players is that they're young. And really, like, the people that defend this kind of activity are always these old guard people. And they'll always claim, well, that's the way it's always been. And that's the way it should be. This reminds me a little bit of when the Richie Incognito thing happened in football a few years ago, where there was this idea, like, you can't police locker rooms. The locker room is not a normal place of business. It's different. It's men. It's so and whatnot. Except then a bunch of players came out and said, no, this is not what it's supposed to be like, and we don't want our workplace to be like this. It shows that older guard that claims these are the way that things are supposed to be were obsolete years ago. You mentioned Bob Knight. There aren't a lot of Bob Knight defenders anymore. These conversations tend to have a wider effect and a quicker effect in large part because the players themselves are standing up for what they believe.
Yeah, I read a comment this week from Georges Laroque. He played 12 seasons in the NHL, and he compared what's happening to the Me Too movement. And while the type and severity of the abuse is certainly different, I don't think he's entirely wrong making that comparison. You have a situation where the balance of power is extremely unbalanced, and abuse of that power has apparently been relatively widespread and well known. Nobody was much trying to hide it, it seems like. And once a couple of people found the courage to come forward and say, this is not right, other people came forward as well, and now we're really getting a bigger picture. But it seems clear to me, and I could be wrong, but it seems clear that when these players got kicked or verbally abused or their coach made a racist comment, it probably wasn't the first time that happened to them in the game, because if it was, I don't think everyone would have ignored it so easily and for so long. The New York Times is calling it a cultural upheaval. So, Shireen, I'm wondering how long before it trickles down to the lower levels of the game?
Well, I like the term cultural upheaval far more than I like the comparison, although I'm a huge fan of Larac, the comparison with the Me Too. I don't like it at all. I think we shouldn't have to do the suppression Olympics within abuse in order to do this. And even the conflation of the racist abuse versus physical and verbal and psychological, which is all there. Those that have to deal with racialized abuse is far different and carries different types of trauma than psychological and physical would, et cetera, et cetera. So I think in terms of when it will trickle down, the whole system needs to change here. Kwame Mason is the director of a really fantastic film called Soul on Ice, which speaks about Black players in the late 19th and early 20th centuries in the East Coast of Canada. And he said, hockey is innately diverse. It stems across many communities, Indigenous, Black communities. The Punjabi community has their own TV show, Hockey Night in Punjabi, which is wildly popular. So hockey has touched across those lines, but it's not inclusive. And we need to start having very candid conversation. And for me, who leads those conversations is imperative. I don't like the word reckoning, because reckoning to me infers accountability. And I haven't seen that from the gatekeepers in hockey.
All right, so this week, my tender heart was broken when I learned that the Tampa Bay Rays have been forced to abandon their plans to split time between St. Petersburg and Montreal, at least until 2028. Okay, look, I know that for many reasons, this was a terrible idea. It's logistically ridiculous. It would be a nightmare for players and their families. And in the end, it might have just been an excuse for the Rays to shake down two cities in two separate countries for two new ballparks. On the other hand, neither St. Petersburg nor Montreal seem to be able to support a full-time team, and both cities seem to want one, and I personally was looking forward to visiting Montreal in the summertime to watch some baseball. Shireen, are you also sad?
I'm happy because Expo gear was really cool and is like super retro. So yeah. I will acquire a hat at some point. I agree with you. I don't even know how this is possible. But you know what this does is make me a little bit frustrated, because the lengths that people will go to and can go to for sport is phenomenal. And then part of me is like, why don't people just invest in women's sports this way? So I kind of have a different lens.
Will, what do you make of this?
A large part of this came down to the fact that cities will no longer pay for this stuff anymore. Yeah. There was a time where maybe 15 years ago, this ploy might have worked. The idea like, oh, we're going to revitalize downtown. All the money's going to stay in the community. Don't worry. Sure, there's a tax breaks and a bond break and you're paying for 3/4 of the stadium. But trust us, we owners will give it back to you, citizens. And so, for crying out loud, the new Yankee Stadium and Citi Field were built in large part by Giuliani. Sneaking that stuff out the door on his way out. To me, this has been a very welcome development over the last 5-10 years. City councils don't buy this anymore. States don't buy this anymore. There's occasionally, it's sadness because like, oh, we might lose our team or we have to figure this stuff out. But in the long run, it's good because they're not just giving over the farm to these owners anymore.
Yeah, the one thing St. Petersburg really did right is someone there knew how to draw up an ironclad use agreement. It's not even a lease. And the Rays can't break it. Like, they just can't get out of it. And part of me wants the Rays to continue playing at the Tropicana, which is a terrible place to watch baseball. And continue to have some of the lowest attendance numbers in baseball and continue to lose money, because maybe that will convince billionaire owners that even if they can find a city that will give them a free stadium, they'd be better off building their own. This is my hope. All right, well, take it away.
I am a fan of the University of Illinois football team who, what's the right word to put it? They're bad. They've been terrible forever. Watching this team has been horrible. They've been a miserable team. But this year behind Lovie Smith, who is a coach of Illinois football, Illinois is 6-6. They're still not very good. But they're going to play in one of these silly little lower tier bowls. These bowls do not matter. There's literally a bowl called the Cheez-It Bowl. It is in the grand tradition of really silly bowls that are not for a championship and have very bizarre sponsors, from the Poland Weed Eater Bowl to the MicronPC.com Bowl. Anyway, the point is, all of these tiny little bowls, they're ridiculous. They probably don't need to exist, but they are good for fans of teams and players of teams like this. this year, it's very likely that Illinois is going to go to Detroit the day after Christmas. The Quick Lane Bowl. I don't know what Quick Lane is. I have no idea. But that's the bowl they might be playing at. And it makes me happy to have all these little silly bowls as a place to basically get us through that week between Christmas and New Year's and give us something to do rather than talk to our families.
Shireen, what do you think?
I really, really appreciate these smaller things because it's almost like reclaiming a bit of the sport in a way. Mm. It's not only the Super Bowl. It's not only the Rose Bowl. There can be other things and everyone can take part in that. And I like that. It's almost like grassroots in a way, even though we know that the teams are huge and the schools are big. But I really appreciate the frivolity almost of it because sometimes sports needs that.
All right. So you all have convinced me that meaningless bowl games are good. But can we all agree on one thing? And that is, if a player for one of these teams that's not that great happens to be declaring for the NFL draft and he wants to skip that meaningless bowl game, we're all going to be okay with it, right? Because all the drama over, like, he should be playing for the love of his team or he should be playing for the love of the game, when the CEO of the Outback Bowl made $1 million and change last year, really just harshes on my enjoyment of this corporate spectacle that bowl games have become.
You know, I have to say, though, that makes me feel like you are disrespecting the San Diego County Credit Union Bowl. And I have to tell you, if you're not going to support, it's funny, as a fan of college football and I watch the San Diego County Credit Union Bowl, I'm not even sure what they're selling me in that ad. Can I join them? I don't live in San Diego. Can I get in a credit union? I'm not employed by anyone in San Diego. Why are they sponsoring this ball? But nevertheless, yes, I don't understand why a lot of these college players play in the championship game if they've got million dollar deals to go in the NFL. But that is probably a whole other discussion for a whole other time.
Probably.
Imagine being at home and being like, well, you know, I'm generally happy with my bank, but...
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Toronto-based sports writer Shireen Ahmed and New York Magazine contributing editor Will Leach. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you as always.